that does £29 a month get you these days? With Virgin Media, it gets you... Get more bang for your bundle. Up to 50 meg super fast broadband with unlimited downloads. And our clever TiVo box for free view and catch up TV. Just £29 a month for 12 months, including line rental. Activation fee £14.99. Search Virgin Media Bundles. Cable streets only. New customers on player TV bundle. Installation fee may apply. Standard pricing after 12 months, subject to credit check and further terms and conditions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Completely functional, Russ. How are you?
Partially functional, but still here. So we'll. It's one of those. It's just one of those days, but that's okay. We're gonna sort of recap part of the hockey season here since we've got a break. Mm-hmm. Although I did watch college hockey tonight, I fully divulged that. But we do have a special guest. We have Dennis Gorman, and he covers the New York Rangers and a lot of other things and a lot of other teams. And, you know, my recommendation is he should get paid by the word, by the spoken word and by the tweeted word. And, Dennis, how are you?
Good, Russ. How are you guys doing?
Good. All right.
Doing
let's
well.
Get down to it. I guess let's start with the Islanders just to get a feel, because you're more in the area than I am, Dennis. I mean, I certainly – keep touch with a lot of things there and have friends on the island and all that. But, you know, they've got their temporary bump with Doug Weight, but, again, it's a small sample size. Do we have any measurable Islander euphoria yet to the point where fans actually think they're going to make the playoffs?
I think right now the euphoria is that Jack Capuano's fired, and from what I've been able to glean reading the Islanders' Twitter, that Jack Capuano's fired, and now the dynasty will somehow revive itself. I'm not a big buyer into that philosophy. Dougie Weight is still essentially running Jack Capuano's systems with the players that Jack Capuano had.
Right.
I think eventually they're going to regress to what they were, and which is a subpar hockey team.
Dennis, with regards to the Islanders, terms of I know that they've obviously it's been just one thing after another between complaints about, you know, the Barclays Center ice. With regards to in terms of the arena situation in Barclays, there's a lot of noise in regards to the long-term situation there. What has been your general read? How long do you think they're there to stay, or do you think there's the possibility that they, in the near future, that they might move again?
I think the possibility exists that they could move again. If the renovation of the Nassau Coliseum, if they can expand the seating to 16,000 seats, I think it makes all the sense in the world to bring the Islanders back to Long Island. However you want to judge Barclays Center, the Islanders' relationship with Barclays Center for a year and a half, it hasn't worked out, or hasn't worked very well with the sight lines, the player complaints about the ice conditions, the morning skate, last year, the first half of the season, they would have morning skates at Barclays, and then they would bus over to a hotel, get their rest, and then bus back to the arena, and then they would take car services home to Long Island. And right. I guess at the halfway point of last season, some of the veteran players and their leadership group went to Garth and Jack and basically asked if they could skate on Long Island, if they could have the morning skates on Long Island. And that request was granted, and it's still going on today.
Right. That's when Wong bought Twin Rinks, right? Because they were in financial trouble. And just, okay. So, I mean, that part was a good move. All right. Well, let's move to the Devils, because the Devils story is not really that great. It's just there's not that much to it other than I like what I'm, finally seeing out of Pavel Zacha. I think it, it took a little while. They moved him around, and I think he may have found his spot. I'm happy that Santini is doing well. I always felt like he should, get a shot regardless of his age because he had a pro body. So there's things to look forward to in the future, but I think, Dennis, the issue with this year is, the guys that had that little bit of magic left, like Camilleri and such, they've gone back to looking like older players. So I think the Devils are just sort of a mix, and they're probably their best bet is to pick as high as they can in the draft. What do you think?
I agree with you. To me, the big issue is, like you point out, Santini's looked good. Severson's gotten some opportunities to play pretty significant minutes.
Yeah.
But by and large, that back end isn't anything to write home about. I think their group, they need a young number one D to build around. I think they think going forward up front, they're going to build around Zacha and obviously Taylor Hall. But you still need, a legitimate number one defenseman, and they just don't have that yet. And if you go back
That's
to the
fair.
Dynasty, if you go back to their golden years, you had Scott Niedermeyer, you had Scott Stevens, you had two legitimate number one defensemen on the ice at pretty much all times, and now you don't have that.
Dennis, sticking with the Devils, with a little bit of time just to kind of ruminate and examine the big trade from the summer, obviously, with Hall coming to New Jersey in exchange for Adam Larson. From both teams' perspectives, from both the Devils' perspective and from what the Oilers received in Larson, what has been your overall opinion and view of that trade? I mean, we have Taylor, obviously, leading the Devils with 31 points in 40 games. Larson has been certainly coming into his own with the Oilers, as certainly valuable as a right shot defenseman. What has been your views on that trade with time to look at it?
I mean, right now, I think you have to look at it as both teams got what they needed or wanted. The Devils last year were in the playoff mix right up until the trade deadline, or just right after that, but they weren't scoring any goals. They were maybe a two goals a game team. They're still not an offensive dynamo, but Hall gives them a presence and an ability to change a game on any shift. And Adam Larson, Edmonton, just for years, they drafted well in the first rounds, because it's kind of hard to screw up Connor McDavid and Taylor Hall. But if you look at their drafts, in the following rounds, they got nothing, and their back end suffered significantly for it. So they now have a guy who can play 20 minutes a night. He can play kind of that shutdown role, and he's beginning to add, a little bit of offense to his game. So, I think it's worked out for both teams. Long term, I still think the Devils got the better of the deal, because Hall's a guy who should portend to be a 40 goal, 70 to 80 point winger, and those guys are difficult to come by.
All right, so now we switch over to the Rangers, and there's just like an onion, there's a lot of layers. But, the first one that I thought was, 12 years in the making was the Larry Brooks article on how there's a goalie problem, and, Henrik Lundqvist's play has slipped. And, I said to myself, and even to Anthony and a few others, I'm like, I don't know if there's a real goalie problem, because with Ranta out, there was no way they were going to really let Magnus Helberg play really any kind of minutes. He's not an NHL goalie. So I just felt like Larry was waiting for 12 years on that article, and in 3 days it was irrelevant. Like, it was a typical New York, hey, your favorite star is 30-31, is he over the hill? And most of the time when those articles get written in New York, the guy isn't. That's always been my experience. What was yours?
Well, it's interesting because Larry had written, he had talked to Henrik a couple days prior to that column coming out, and Henrik had said something to the effect of that he wanted to get more work in, he wanted to get into a rhythm, he wanted to play a lot of games. And then when Raanta went down with the injury, as you noted, they were, you know, Alain Vigneault was not going to, you know, ride and die with Magnus Helberg. He was going to, he was going to go with Henrik Lundqvist, which is the obvious play and the correct play. You know, I think you if you looked at Henrik's play in that, they had an 8-game stretch between January 3 and the loss to Dallas on January 17. He had a goals against of 3 and a save percentage. I want to say that was .870, which by any standard isn't great. But the question that I have, and I still haven't been able to get it answered, was it Henrik's play or was it the play in front of him by his defensemen and their and the team's overall defensive structure, or a combination of both?
Right.
My feeling is it was a combination of both. I mean, because if you look at his play, if you look at his play during that stretch, he wasn't square to the shooters. He was unusually aggressive. He looked like he was trying to overcompensate for breakdowns, and the puck was ending up in the back of his net. So that's kind of my thought process.
Yeah.
Dennis, looking at, I certainly kind of zoomed in myself, obviously, watching Wednesday night's game between the Rangers and the Flyers. And one thing I certainly noticed in that game, even though not necessarily any shots on goal for him, but Rick Nash really looked like, really had moments there where he was just absolutely abusing the Flyers' defense and basically the five-man unit. At times, do you feel that he's, I mean, obviously with that, with his contract number, his number is what it is, but do you feel as if he's starting to get to the point where, as we get closer to the stretch run after the All-Star break, that he's going to begin to really impose his will even more so as we get into the stretch?
I think so. I mean, he obviously had the two stretches where he sat out due to the groin injuries that he thinks were due to the Barclay Center ice being incredibly soft, but when he's driving the net like that, the way he can, and holding on to pucks, I don't know how you defend him because he's so big, he's so strong, and he's so skilled for a big man. I mean, he's 6'4", 220, and he handles the puck like Matt Zuccarello, which almost seems it seems like it's unfair if you're defending him. So yeah, I would think this stretch of games coming up after the All-Star break and head to the end of the season, All-Star break came to the end of the season, I think we're going to see his best hockey, and we might see his best playoff hockey this year.
I'll say this about Nash, and I've been really critical. The magic number for him is he's got to have over 300 shots. If he has over 300 shots, if you go back and look at his career, that's when he gets 30-plus goals. He's not on pace for 300 shots. He's on pace for more than 183 last year because he has 103, but he's only going to be slightly better than that. And it just, Dennis, it's kind of weird that if a layman like me can see that, why can't Alain Vigneault see that and say, the mandate is you shoot 5 to 7 times a game at least. Like, what is so hard about that?
I mean, I think they've probably had those talks. I think, Vigneault wants him shooting the puck. But if you look at the way that team is constructed, they're everyone on the team tries to be a playmaker and set and they're almost collectively too unselfish.
Yeah.
They're a group that honestly could use an Alex Ovechkin where you know he's going to set up in the left circle and he's just going to bomb away. You know, he's not looking to pass.
Yeah.
He's looking to put the puck in the net. And, you know, this is a group that desperately needs a shooter, especially if they want to go deep into the playoffs.
All right, the last question for you. Can they be knocked out in the first round? Because we all look at this team and say they're definitely making the playoffs, but with the way the division is, it just seems like there's only maybe two teams, maybe three they could beat in the first round, but there's a lot of bad first-round matchups, at least from my view. Is your view any different?
No, my view is exactly the same. I thought about it today. You know, if they – I think they could be Columbus in the first round, but I think that would
right.
be a very tough series because Columbus is so much bigger than this Ranger team, and they're going to – try to physically wear on the Rangers. If they get Washington, if they get Pitt, it will be over five, maybe six games. And if they get one of the wild card positions, that's not a guarantee they go deep either. You know, if they get Montreal in the first round, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Carey Price stands on his head and they go out in five or six games.
Yeah, I agree. Well, everybody should catch Dennis Gorman on Twitter, at Dennis Gorman, just one N. I'm not sure why his parents didn't put a second N in there, but they didn't. So it's just, it's one N. I appreciate you coming on. I see you a lot. You're very active, and it's always fun. So thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks, boys. Always fun to come on your show.
Thanks, Dennis.
All right, now we open the door for Mike Ogiello to come in. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am fine and pondering some things for next week after watching the top 100 list, which we've agreed not to talk about.
Yeah, I wanted us to be able to digest it. You know, if we went just strictly
sure.
off, hey, here's the list. I think in a week we'll have better thoughts. But that's just my thought.
Yeah.
But
do agree. I think we need a little bit of time on that.
Just to
sort of absorb it and come up with alternatives.
Yeah. That's good, because I wasn't sure if I was in the minority for that. So we did see Leafs Flyers, and it was an interesting game. It wasn't the most action-packed or exciting game, and I'll start with Anthony. What was your takeaway from that game?
It was an interesting start to the game. Certainly, I thought the Leafs did, and Dave Haxtell certainly spoke to this, the fact that he felt that, you know, early on in the game, that the Leafs did a pretty good job defending. I thought pace-wise, they were smart in terms of how they were handling themselves, you know, in terms of their energy. And then the opportunity came, obviously, with the double minor to Ivan Provorov. And when that kill happened, you could feel this sort of the moment. You could definitely feel momentum within that moment turn. It was an interesting game in terms of its flow because, again, Philadelphia, I thought, there was a little bit of rope-a-dope certainly early on. They were trying to figure out how to handle – you know, those control bursts of speed. And you spoke to this, Ross, during the game, the fact that Toronto has, you know, knows when to sort of punch the Jets a little bit harder. And the one the biggest thing I sort of noticed pattern-wise in the game is the fact that the Leafs were very, very aggressive on their forecheck in the game, probably more aggressive than I've seen other teams play against Philadelphia, which allowed Philly to kind of at times of the game exploit the spacing by the Leafs in terms of stretch passes and you know sort of open things up offensively for themselves again as we got through the end of the second period, certainly after the Leafs got the tying goal, felt you know that the Flyers were kind of hope just trying to get out of that period and then in the third play very much, I think, was leaning into in Philadelphia's favor in terms of really pinning the Leafs back in their end. And then we had, of course, get the goal by Lubimov, and then at the end, it turns into just a mad dash, and you really see what the Leafs are capable of in terms of creating absolute chaos in the defensive zone against a team like Philadelphia, who's, you know, their D can be slow to react at times. And Philly was fortunate, certainly, to come out of the game with a win, but they did.
Mike, what's your thoughts?
Well, watching that game, I mean, and I've watched every Leaf game this year, that was one of the more sluggish performances by the Leafs. They were coming off, you know, second of back-to-back. I thought, you know, McElhinney, they've had some problems with their backup goaltending, and it's, you know, a second pretty decent performance by McElhinney in goal. But they really, you know, after beating Detroit on Wednesday, they really didn't have a lot in the tank. And like Anthony was saying, you know, they seemed to try to press the Flyers. Actually, we're, I think, a little too over-aggressive. It led to the Simmons goal in the first period. And late in the game, I think Babcock saw that, you know, his top three lines were tired, so he was mixing in the fourth line with 3 minutes left to go in regulation and the third defensive pairing, and they got caught. I mean, I don't think it's reflective of, you know, how well they performed this year. I didn't think it was a particularly good game by the Leafs.
Yeah, I thought it was one of those games that it showed me where the Leafs are, in the sense that they are a young team. The Flyers did figure out how to win that game, and the Leafs may have that problem in the second half. Like, I think for as good as they were in the first half, veterans know how to take the grind of the second half, and, you know, Leafs have some veterans, but not enough of them. And I think, Mike, I think that will end up costing them their playoff spot, because I just think a lot of guys are learning how to deal with all that, especially you were telling me about the schedule. Why don't you let everybody know just what kind of schedule they're in for?
Well, they have 7 more back-to-backs, and they have the second most back-to-backs in the NHL. Everybody has a lot of them, but I think the most is 19. They had 18 this year, and they still have another 7 left to go. But they have 35 games, and all the prognosticators and analysts are looking at the fact that they have 5 or 6 games ahead of Boston and a couple other teams in the East. But they have 35 games in the final 69 days of the regular season. You know, so it's one every 2 nights. And that's, you know, they've already used their bye week, and we can see, you know, with the injury to Morgan Rielly, they were barely a .500 team. I think they were 2-2-1 with Rielly out of the lineup. You know, that, and they'll get him back, but that kind of big, you know, that kind of really loaded schedule could lead to injuries, and we know pretty much that Lou Lamoriello is not going to go out and add rental players, and, you know, they're going to go with the kids. They're going to see what they have. They may even sell off if they start to drop out of the race, but they're not going to add players. So this is going to be a test of these young guys to see if they can handle, you know, a lot of work down the stretch.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so we have the All-Star game coming up. I'll admit I don't have any massive thoughts about it. I certainly will watch. I usually attend, but I didn't attend this year. And it's an interesting, we'd be remiss if we didn't say that for as much as they're mentioning John Scott this year, going into last year's All-Star game, John Scott was persona non grata. Like, it is kind of weird how all this has happened.
It's a very weird dynamic how they're sort of, you know, celebrate, you know, almost semi, you know, celebrating, you know, the randomness of the John Scott phenomena last year. But, certainly last year it looked like they were doing everything possible to not have him into the, you know, did not get him into the All-Star game for obvious reasons. And it's going to be kind of, we all understood why. It's just,
right.
But it is certainly strange in that respect. And it's interesting because, again, this year it did create a buzz factor for the All-Star game, you know, as manufactured as it might have been. Whereas this season, it's in LA, it's Hollywood, and honestly, to me, it's not really moving the meter for me much at all this year in terms of conversation, discussion. It's like, yep, it's an event. Yep, you know, I'm sure it'll be fun for people, but again, the whole format and everything, I don't know. It's just I prefer the old conference format. It's just me in terms of East versus West, and it's not like a whole fuddy-duddy, but it's just it's getting to the point now where what's the new gadget or gimmick that we can put in this year? I know you got to try to keep it fresh and make it fun, but I know so many people complain about the fact that, you know, the games have just gotten just out of whack, but that's kind of reflective of what an all-star game kind of is. Nobody's really pushing it that hard. And that's, again, it doesn't, the all-star games really, to me, have kind of moved on past an area of interest. So it's more who gets named, who do we get ticked off that gets snubbed, and then you go from there.
Well, if it's barely moved the meter for you, it's probably going to be DOA for Mike, but let's ask him anyhow.
Yeah, I have my movie passes ready for Sunday afternoon, honestly.
What
movie,
Mike?
I may know
what movie.
I'm not sure yet, but I may tape it and just fast forward through it to make sure like nobody got hurt or anything spectacular didn't happen. But it's,
so you're
going to
watch
honestly,
it for potential injuries.
it's like watching paint dry. And you know, like last year, you're right. You know, the John Scott thing made me tune in, and I thought it was an interesting and at least half-heartedly entertaining spectacle. But what I'm waiting for is a year and a half or 2 years down the line when the revisionism happens with the movie that comes out, and they'll probably make it sound like John Scott was, you know, welcomed and all, the NHL loved him being there. We know that wasn't the case, but I they're never going to do away with it. I'm one for abolishing the All-Star game, but they're never going to do it because it's more than just the event. And, you know, they want to promote the game, and I get that. But, yeah, it's just in 1980 when Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky were on the ice I think it was the Olympia or Joe Louis. I think it was Joe Louis because it was the first year that it opened. That was a game when I was a 13-year-old that I was interested in watching. Now I'm not interested in watching it at all.
That was in black and white.
And it also...
Yeah, I watched it on 8mm. There you go.
And I'd also say, Russ and Mike, in many ways, what also has taken its starch out of the All-Star game as well, beyond the fact that it just didn't represent hockey as we know it, the outdoor games. Let's face it. I think they have sort of taken what used to be the excitement of those games and now transposing it into games that actually matter in that kind of a spectacle. It's like, how many different spectacle events can the NHL sort of have? And in my opinion, the outdoor games, even if it's a stadium, if it's not the Winter Classic per se, if it's a stadium series game, it still gets a buzz factor that all-star games used to get. And I think the NHL kind of has their kind of, they try to kind of have their cake and eat it too. And I understand they need to, it's an opportunity not just for players to get together, but obviously all, you know, corporate sponsors and everybody else to hobnob and everything else and everybody to network. But still, to me, the All-Star game again and All-Star events have kind of just sort of gone by, and the outdoor games, even with the debate that we've had of whether or not there's too many, there's still a buzz factor that's involved every time there's an outdoor game. So,
I agree with
that. To me, that's what's replaced. You know, that's what's replaced is the mid-season spectacle events now.
All right, I got one more quickie subject and one statement. The quickie subject is, I think I know who they're going to cast as John Scott. John Hamm.
Let me take a no.
John Hamm. Yeah, no.
No. I've
heard guy who
you watch.
The closest guy the thing is the guy who's closest to him physically is already already played a hockey player already in a movie. To me, Liev Schreiber would have been probably perfect to play John Scott. And the thing
right,
is,
he's
already Ross Ray, so it's like that ship's already sailed. Even physically, if you look at the two of them, they actually physically, I mean, Scott's gigantic, but Liev actually facially, I think, looks close, you know, not that far away in terms of facial features to Scott. So to me, Liev would have been perfect, but again, it would have been sort of, it would be redundant with the character he played in the Goon movies.
I would go with it because he's a great actor, and I think he can pull it off.
He's got
comedic chops. But no, I've heard talk about Vince Vaughn, which if it's Vince Vaughn, then it's gonna be sort of like one of those,
I think you're dumbing it down with Vince Vaughn, right?
When you think of Vince Vaughn, you think of dumb movies.
Yeah.
Right, it's going to be like one of those Eddie the Eagle movies. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like just like a semi-serious event, and then it turns out to be this like a joke movie. It's like, and I don't know. I don't think I'd go for that. But
no, I agree. We're going to go like 30 seconds in overtime here, but I wanted to acknowledge and give a stick tap to John Tortorella for missing the game to go home to tend to his son's dog. I think that's great.
Yeah.
It's something I would do and a lot of people would do, and I've always said to people, I always felt like Torts was nicer to dogs than to people sometimes, and I stick to that.
He's nicer to dogs than Larry Brooks.
Ms. Perrinus, there's a lot of people that are nicer, we won't get into Dan Boyle's thoughts on Larry Brooks, who happens to be, hold on, and that is another John Tortorella connection right there.
That is.
with Danny Boyle in Tampa, in his Tampa days with Torts when they won the cup together in Tampa. So, yeah, there's a 6 degrees of Torts versus Brooksy.
That's very good. And if you get a chance, there's a picture of Torts' yearbook floating, or his yearbook shot floating around on Twitter. People should check it out. They only called him Tort. T-O-R-T
Tort
picture. And I think that's just a typo. I think if we all go back and think about who edited.
I think probably as a high school student and everything else, they probably referred him as Tort back then. Again, once you get into hockey, you got to add the S at the end of names or the C's,
I got killed for that.
The lack of creativity on nicknames. Tort.
I got killed on that.
Tort.
I posted that last night, and people killed me.
Yeah, did you?
One guy killed me, but I agree that the hockey nicknames they're horrible. But the thing is, if we all go back to our yearbooks, we have to admit now that we're all writers, that all those yearbook editors were crappy. So they probably just left the S off. I think it was a typo. I do.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Although I'd still like to see Mike's yearbook picture. So if he gets a chance, maybe you should post that.
Oh, it's on my Facebook page. You can look at it. I'm incredibly handsome.
All right, and we're going to leave it there. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Off the Post. We'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.